move to the eighth case.
Not being argued.
Well, not being argued. Okay. Is that it?
Submitted on the briefs.
Yeah, eighth is on the briefs.
Okay. What about nine?
Nine we are arguing.
Okay. Bailey versus United States.
Yeah, the player didn't get paid on the eighth case.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jeremy Gordon, and I represent the appellate in this case, Mr. L.A. Bailey. This is the appeal of the denial of a 2255 from the United States District Court for the Southern District of Illinois. Mr. Bailey has one issue that's in two parts. His issue is that Bailey's prior counsel was ineffective for failing to urge that his possession of a controlled substance and his burglary of a building convictions were not qualifying convictions under 4B1.1 of the United States Sentencing Guidelines. The first point that I'd like to make is that the court can hear these claims through a liberal construction of Bailey's 2255 when he was pro se. Mr. Bailey's original 2255 was a pro se filing, and in that filing he made several claims, and there were also supplements to his 2255 there were other documents that were filed that were supplements to his 2255 that were made by the judge. And when his 2255 was denied, he filed for a certificate of appealability. However, while these specific claims were not made in that 2255, the court can still hear these claims. There were several things that were made. There were several statements where Mr. Bailey said that he was not a career offender. There were several statements made where he said that he was not a career offender in his 2255. And those were very broad statements that were made. But the court has done several times, this court has said that a person who has who is pro se does not have to have, is not held to the same stringent requirements as a person who has an attorney. This court's used the Haynes case in the past and has used other cases in order to construe and interpret a person's 2255 in order to include claims that weren't even necessarily in their 2255. The court can use a liberal construction of the 2255 that Mr. Bailey made in order to reach the claims that we've made here. And furthermore, with regard to the burglary of a building, our submission to the court would be that can be reviewed under plain error. Through a liberal construction standard, the court can reach the merits of that claim through a plain error review, and I'll explain why in a few moments. I would also submit that it's within the interest of justice for the court to exercise its discretionary authority to recognize that and to review that. The second point that I'd like to make is that Mr. Bailey's possession charge does not meet the standard for a career offender. Mr. Bailey was convicted of unlawful possession of a controlled substance. In the documents that were submitted to the court, there was a contradiction. Several of the documents that come in state that Mr. Bailey was convicted of possession, and several documents come in that say that Mr. Bailey was convicted of delivery of a controlled substance. The transcript that was provided, the transcript from the district court even states that at the time it states that it was delivery, but when the court is pronouncing the sentence, the court pronounced the sentence, and the court explains that uses the term possession of a controlled substance. In addition to that, the docket sheet also says possession of a controlled substance, and docket entries are made that state possession of a controlled substance. Now, we know from the Johnson case that the court has to use the least prohibited act when the court is unable to determine what part of the statute the defendant violated. And what I would submit to the court is that in this case, the court is unable to make that determination because there are several times when it says delivery and there are several times when it says possession. Now, in the government's brief, the government says that it's clearly a misstatement and that it was a slip of the tongue. But what I would also submit to the court is that it's not a misstatement when there are other documents that are submitted by the clerk, who is the keeper of the documents, and that there is no affidavit from the judge or the clerk on file with regards to if this was a misstatement or if there was a slip of the tongue. Affidavits are routinely brought forward in 2255 responses by the government, and no such thing was done here. What I would also submit to the court is that the prosecutors indicate that it would be inappropriate in every situation for an attorney to get CJA funds and order a transcript and read the transcript every time that a person is charged with a crime. But what I would submit to the court is that when the court is looking at a person who is a career offender, then the law already says that a defense attorney is supposed to make a reasonable investigation. And that reasonable investigation would come through talking with a person's client and saying, this is what they have on you, is this true or not? We know that in this situation, as my position is, that would have led to the transcripts getting sought, and that would have led to the statements being made at the sentencing portion and an objection with regards to whether or not Mr. Bailey, whether this was a possession or a delivery case. What I would also submit to the court is that the burdens facing counsel for federal criminal defense cases are high. When a counsel knows that someone is going to be charged and that the state is seeking to label them a career offender, then the burden is very high, and an attorney should do anything and everything. I'm not asking the court to make a bright line rule. I'm not asking the court to say that it has to be done in every case, but I am saying to the court that it needs to be a reasonable investigation, and a reasonable investigation was not done here in this case. Now, the next point that I'd like to make is that Mr. Bailey's burglary case is also not a proper predicate for the career offender enhancement. Now, this court has used the categorical approach in 2006, and this court has stated as part of that categorical approach that the court will look at what the law says as opposed to
where in the 2255 papers of Mr. Bailey did he challenge the burglary conviction as a predicate offense?
Mr. Bailey did not specifically challenge the burglary as part of his 2255.
So how would we get to that if it's not mentioned there at all?
My position would be with regard to that is that Mr. Bailey did make broad statements in his 2255 that he was not a career offender. Because he, as part of his statements as not being a career offender...
That seemed to focus on the drug conviction.
That does seem to focus on the drug conviction, but what I would submit to the court is that because Mr. Bailey was pro se at the time, that Mr. Bailey's 2255 would receive a liberal construction.
So you're basically saying by filing a 2255, a career offender... person sentenced under career offender provisions effectively challenges all of the underlying convictions, all the prior convictions?
I would ask the court to apply the liberal construction that the court has in the past and construe that to include this challenge to this crime being a career
offender. The petitioner would have the burden on a 2255 of showing the ineffective assistance. Not that the court would have the burden of exploring all the different convictions.
I would agree, Judge, but with regard to that,
That light just means you have your rebuttal time, so you can use it or not, depending.
Well, I'll answer this question and then I'll reserve the rest of my time. With regard to that, the court could also look at this from a plain error standard. The court could use a plain error standard with regards to the fact that this burglary case does not even meet the categorical approach because the Illinois statutes are far broader than what is required to be a career offender under the federal statutes and under the career offender statutes.
All right, thank you.
And with that, I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. With respect to the conviction involving the unlawful delivery of a controlled substance, the government suggests you don't even get to the state court transcript. The charging documents in state court, there was both an information and then a separate indictment, both charge unlawful delivery of a controlled substance within 1,000 feet of a church. The judgment in this case, and even the amended judgment in this case, show that it was unlawful delivery of a controlled substance within 1,000 feet of a church. So all of the charging documents, all of the judgments indicate that. The transcript was not submitted to the district court until after the district court had entered its ruling denying the 2255 motion. The government moved to strike it because that's not properly supplementing the record as to what happened. It's an addition to the record, and did so in this court also. But even if you look at the transcript and the entire plea colloquy, the entire plea colloquy indicates it's a charge of unlawful delivery of controlled substance. The factual basis is that, and literally the judge made a misstatement at the end just saying it was unlawful possession. The evidence, if you even get to the transcript and the government submits you don't because the charging documents are clear, the predicate was an unlawful delivery of controlled substance. With respect to the residential burglary conviction, the government submits that that's not even before this court. It was never raised before the district court. Your Honor shouldn't touch it or shouldn't even reach the issue.
So you contend it was waived by not being mentioned?
Yes, Your Honor. In our brief, we mentioned that it was waived by not being addressed or mentioned or raised at all in the district court.
Mr. Gordon's arguing it was only forfeited, though, that we could see it, we could reach it on plain error. Do you have a response to that?
If you want to look at it a plain air standard, Your Honors, you can. I just think it's incredulous that an argument is never even raised. Do you give the district court a chance to address it and then say on appeal, this is an issue? And I think it is forfeited. He raised one issue regarding his career offender status, and he did so specifically in two different grounds. He specifically mentioned the unlawful delivery, so the government submits he did forfeit it. If it is just waived and there's plain air standard, the government still prevails. There is one argument, if you do reach the merits of the residential burglary, there is one argument that I failed to address, and I think it's legally dispositive of the issue. The petitioner's argument is that the last sentence in the residential burglary statute, which reads, this offense includes the offense of burglary as defined in section 19-1, renders it no longer a crime of violence. The basic legal argument that disposes of it is that language was added to the Illinois residential burglary statute in 2001. Mr. Bailey's conviction was in 1994, so that language wasn't even there when he was convicted. And the way I know it was added in 2001 was Public Act 91-928 of the Illinois legislature added that language in 2001, so it didn't even apply to his conviction for residential burglary. I think I've addressed all the issues that have been raised. If the court has any further questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time? You have 1 minute left. I'll give you two.
Thank you, Judge. The first thing that I would like to address would be with regards to the drug conviction. There are statements that were there is the indictment, and the indictment says what it says, and there is a judgment, and the judgment says what it says. But when Mr. Bailey was in front of the court, then the court stated that it was possession. And when Mr. Bailey and when the court clerk printed out the documents and the documents and in the docket entry, it says possession. There is an issue as to what
doesn't
he was charged.
Doesn't the judgment cite to the delivery statute? The judgment of conviction?
The judgment does cite to the
and isn't the indictment charge, doesn't it charge delivery?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Your Honor. But what I would submit to the court is that we are here on ineffective assistance of counsel grounds. And the former counsel could have brought this up, but he did not. The trial counsel could have brought this up, but he could not. He did not. And the appellate counsel submitted it in Andrew's brief. So it was not brought up on either side. For them, they could have brought it up, and it would have at least got some amount of traction. It would have done enough with regards to the Strickland versus Washington test with regards to ineffective assistance of counsel. It could have raised the issue. And the same could have happened with regard to the burglary case. The burglary case was not referenced at all, and I would still submit to the court that it's for a plain error review. But in addition to that, with regard to the burglary, with regard to the drug case, the docket sheet was online. So it would have been easy for the prior defense counsel or the appellate counsel to go and look it up and print it out and bring it forward to the court. But they did not do that, and that would be ineffective assistance of counsel. Does the court have any questions for me?
I don't believe so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. And that is the final case this morning. It'll be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.